This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I am so happy I have in the studio with me today Jackie Minetti, who is one of our local authors. She is absolutely fantastic. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Patsy.
Oh, I'm so glad that you could join me today. On Tuesday, I had in Joe Callahan, and I want to just say a shout out to Joe to thank him so much for coming in on the 3rd of July, because I love to honor vets, and it was just such a joy to have him in it. You know, Joe is an Irishman, and he wrote a book called Navyland. And I tell you, he was so funny, and he is so funny, that the time went too quickly, and I have to have him back. But I want to give a special shout-out to all vets, because it was a wonderful 4th of July, and I hope that everybody had a good time. And when I think of 4th of July, of course, I always think of my father, who was in World War II, like yours. Mm-hmm. And my father won a silver medal, and I'm very, very proud of him. And I know that you are very, very proud of your father. And you wrote one of your books, and we're going to talk about all of your books, but we're going to talk about Jacqueline, mm-hmm. which is a book you wrote about your father. And the most beautiful part of that story is that your father lived long enough for you to actually see the story and the book being published. Yes. That was, you know, it took you a while before you actually sat down and wrote that book. But,
oh, yes, it did.
but boy, it was wonderful that he got to see that you put his story. And let's tell the story about Jacqueline, because your father was really a fantastic person.
Yes, he was. He, being able to put that book in his hands on his 99th birthday was just one of the high points of my life. It really was. And he passed 6 months later. So I just am so blessed that I was able to have that opportunity to do that. He was just thrilled with it. He loved it. He called me after he read it, and my mom said, "He's been crying." and I said, "Oh, my goodness." And he got on the phone, and he said, "Girl, you did it." He said, "I'm so proud of you." And he had just been bugging me forever to write this story. And it was funny, because I'd never thought in terms of writing a book for younger readers. And I don't know why. I, to this day, cannot fathom why it didn't occur to me, because I was a teacher in middle school of reading. And the Jacqueline, the real Jacqueline, was about the same age as my students. And it should have been a no-brainer, you know, to write a book about for middle grade kids, about a kid that was middle grade age. But I just never looked at it that way. And when I did, the whole story seemed to come together all at once.
Well, sometimes that happens, and that's why I love to do Joy on Paper. You know, I get to talk to all the famous best-selling authors, and I love that. And, you know, in 2 weeks, I'm going to have Daniel Silva on.
Oh.
Woo! You know, talk about exciting. But what I love is to encourage everyone that there is a book in you. And when you have a wonderful family story, like Jackie here, because she was named actually after Jacqueline, mm-hmm. and Jackie here, she never thought she would sit down and write the book, and it took her a little bit of time before she did it.
And a lot of nagging on my dad's part as well.
But look how wonderful it is. Just when she talks about the joy of putting this book into her father's hands, it's just so heartwarming. And so all of you who have a family story out there, perhaps it's a story of a grandmother, a grandfather, an uncle, an aunt, somebody who maybe changed your life, or even changed or saved the life of somebody, as Jackie's dad did. These stories are so important to share, and to you, all of you can sit down and start writing. And it's a learning process, right? Mm-hmm. When you, even although you were teaching reading and you're a teacher and you understand writing, you had to go through a learning process.
Oh, yes. I think every book that you write is a learning process. It even if you've written 15 books, that 16th one is a learning process.
So the story, tell us about the story of Jacqueline and how your father got involved.
Okay, well, my dad was a pharmacist with the 127th General Hospital in World War II. And 2 days after D-Day, they were sent to Rennes, France, to set up a military hospital there. The hospital had belonged to the Germans, but the Germans abandoned it when they saw that the tide of the war had turned. And so the 127th went in, and they stripped everything down and re-outfitted it, and they started a military hospital where they were primarily dealing with casualties from the Battle of the Bulge, because that was going on fairly nearby. My dad was staying at a barracks that was several blocks from the hospital, and he would walk from his barracks to the hospital each day. And he noticed there was this little girl who lived on one of the streets that he passed on his way to work, and she just took a liking to him, and she began following him, and he described her as like a little lost puppy. And she was just almost like a street urchin. And the people in France at that point, especially in Rennes, they were just desperately poor. They were coming off several years of really brutal Nazi occupation. And she was just so positive and upbeat and bubbly. And he started, they couldn't really communicate because she did not know English and he knew a little French, but not really enough to converse. But they managed to communicate through like pantomiming and sign language. And he taught her a few English words and she would teach him French words. And she began following him to the hospital every day, and when he would come out of the hospital after his shift was over, she would be waiting there and walk home with him. And eventually she became the sweetheart of the 127th General, but she just really had this affinity, this connection with my dad. And we don't know why, and that's one of the things that I really feel badly about, that I never was able to talk to her and ask her, what was it about my father? And when I decided to write the book, I had to come up with a reason why, because the book was written from her perspective, and I needed to explain why she gravitated so strongly toward him. And the only thing I could come up with was her dad was a pilot for the French Resistance, and his plane was shot down, and his body was not recovered. And I thought, there must be something about my father that reminds her of her dad, and that she's looking for that person to fill that hole in her life. And then I thought, that's kind of almost a universal theme when you think about so many children that are from they're from home one parent households, or their fathers have been deployed, or they've lost a father, or they can kind of identify with that need in a child. And I thought that would be a good way to go, to go about the story. But the first part of the story before my father enters the picture is more fictionalized. The second part, the book's divided into two parts. And part two, once the Americans land in Rennes, that is almost, it's really factual. I mean, I was able to find in the library of the University of Texas Medical Center, they had a book on the 127th General Hospital. It was in their rare book section. And they had a wonderful librarian there who ran off, when I told her what I was doing with the book, she ran off all kinds of information and emailed it to me. And so I was able to get all of the little details about, like, the Christmas party and how they decorated the tree with cotton balls, and they would take tongue depressors and paint them red and white like peppermint sticks and stick them on the Christmas tree. All of that was factual. That was all done back then. And I wanted the book to be historically accurate, and I researched it down to the way the weather was on a certain day to make sure I got it right, because I wanted these young readers to get a real feel for what it was like to live during that time and to go through that experience. And when my dad the unit was then transferred to Nancy from Renz, and it was January 1st of 1945, and my dad remembered it. He didn't talk about, it's funny, he didn't talk about his experiences in the war except for this story of Jacqueline. That was the only war story he ever shared with us. And I think he said that it was like a beautiful, shining moment in a very dark time. And I guess that was what he wanted to remember. That's what he wanted to take away from that whole war experience. And she showed up while they were packing their trucks to leave to move on to Nancy. And it was New Year's Day, and he said the sleet was falling. It was very cold, and he had on this big woolen coat, army. You know, it was an army issued coat. And she showed up at the hospital with this little sweater on, and she was shivering, and she had a loaf of bread under one arm and this book in her hand. And he saw her, and he said, oh my goodness, he said, he took his coat off and he wrapped it around her, and she said she wanted to come and say goodbye to him and to give him a remembrance of her. And to give, you know, a loaf of bread doesn't sound like anything, you know, nowadays, especially to kids. They would have a hard time figuring out why this was special. But
wow, in those days, yeah, a loaf of bread.
they were starving. For her to give this to him was just a huge sacrifice. And the book was a book that her father had given her about Saint Bernadette. And she wrote inside, to my dear friend Bernardo, a remembrance of your friend Jacqueline. And I still have the book. In fact, my dad gave the book. It's all written in French. It's very old and the pages are crumbling, but it's very precious to me. And so he was so touched by that he told her that he wanted her to keep his coat. And he said, and if I ever have a daughter, I'm going to name her Jacqueline. And here I am. That was the story.
It is such a beautiful story. And you did capture the feeling in your book. It is so heartwarming. And it just brings tears to my eyes when I think of her. And how, because you did the research, because you really captured the time and the scene, when you are reading this book, and I think it is such a wonderful book for everybody to read, and particularly for young people, because they need to understand history. Mm-hmm. And simple things like that, needing to understand that there's a time where, you know, a loaf of bread meant so much, and today there are countries where a loaf of mm-hmm. bread means so much, and people are so desperate and so just struggling so hard that if you read a book like Jackie's book here about Jacqueline, you really start to have some feeling of what mm-hmm. suffering does to people, and that a young girl could just have this goodness in her heart, because it wasn't just your father's goodness, but hers, that she would give him this gift, really a gift of joy.
Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, when my dad used to tell the story, he told it over and over again, almost to the point where she became like a presence in our family. And after I wrote my first book, he started, you know, why don't you write the story about Jacqueline? Why don't you write the story? And I told him, you know, Dad, it's a very nice story, and we love it because it's your story and we know you, but there really isn't an audience for it, and there's not enough there to write a whole book on. You know, it may be a little short story, but not a book. And he just was relentless. he would email me places where they, you know, they print your book if you want to write a book, and if somebody, he would read a story about a World War II vet whose story was made into a book, and he'd send that to me. And it was funny because my son's wedding reception, this gentleman came up to me that I didn't even know, and he pulled me aside by the arm, and I thought, my goodness, what's this about? And he said, I'm sitting there, and I was talking to your father, and he told me the most amazing story about an experience he had in World War II, and he said, your father said that you're a writer, and I think you should write a book about it. And so I started giving him all the reasons why this wasn't a good idea. And he said, wait a minute. He said, I have a daughter in sixth grade, and she's reading the Diary of Anne Frank, and I can't convince her that it's not fiction. And she would love a book like this, and it would help her learn history. And it was like this light bulb went on in my head. And I thought, my gosh, this would be perfect for a middle grade reader, and I could teach them about World War II and help them learn history through this. And she was the same age as middle grade readers would be, so she'd be a perfect protagonist for a book for them. And everything came together then. It clicked. Yeah.
And then at
that moment, and I kept saying, why didn't I ever think of this before? You know, I taught middle school reading. This should have been the first thing that jumped out at me, but it never did until that moment.
Well, we are very fortunate that it did, because as you said, you know, it being able to teach children is so important, and then being able to teach them history is a gift that really lasts a lifetime. And anybody who's watched television over the past few days and seen these man in the street interviews where people don't understand and don't know simple things. I mean, they don't know why we celebrate 4th of July. Mm-hmm. They don't know. They think that Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1776. I mean, they really don't know anything. And it is so sad, because you need to be able to put, as they say, if you don't know history, you are actually doomed to relive it.
Oh,
and
yes.
This is happening over and over. It's like, okay, I hate to say this, but you know, there are socialist countries that don't work. And when I thought of that scene about the bread, and I thought how very, very precious the bread was at that time, and how there are countries like we hear about in the news where a loaf of bread is so valuable, and they actually can't even get a loaf of bread anymore. And for a girl to be able to, you know, give this away as a way to thank somebody for being good to her. This is so, it really was so heartfelt, and your book is really absolutely wonderful, and I hope that people will get it. We're going to talk about your other books, but it is so important to get this book, and it is available online wherever books are sold, and it is called Jacqueline, and it is by Jackie Minetti, who is named after Jacqueline, and Minetti is spelled M-I-N-N-I-T-I, and I hope that you'll get that. Now we're going to take a commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about your other project, your Project Junebug, and your new book. And okay. We'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio, Jackie Minetti, and we're going to talk about a new book that she has coming up. But Jackie is also the author of a book called Project Junebug, and it is a story of a dedicated teacher's efforts to help a student with ADHD. It's won lots of awards, including, I'm going to list a few of them, Eric Hoffer Award, National Best Book Award, the Royal Palm Literary Award, Next Generation Indie Book Award, and I think the Mom's Choice Silver Medal, and Project Junebug was also chosen as Book of the Year by Premier Book Awards. Wow, Jackie, congratulations on all of that.
Thank you.
Well, as I said, it is a book about a dedicated teacher, and you were a dedicated teacher for 25 years?
Yes, I was.
And let's talk a little bit about Project Junebug.
Okay, I've always wanted to write. That was always on my bucket list, but when you're a teacher, you just don't have time. You're so busy grading papers and dealing with all the other business that you have to deal with as a teacher. I'm the type of writer that I need long periods of just uninterrupted time so that I can focus and write. I can't do it in spurts and bursts like some writers do. I wish I could, but because of that, I never wrote a book. And when I retired and we moved from New Jersey to Florida, one of the things I thought I wanted to try to do was see if I could, if I had a book in me. And since they say write what you know, the only thing I knew was teaching because I'd been a teacher for so long, and I worked with a lot of kids with ADHD. In fact, I did my master's thesis on strategies that teachers could use to help these kids to learn more efficiently in the classroom. And so I thought, well, maybe I could write a self-help book about, you know, using the information from my master's thesis, but it just sounded so dull. And I thought if I was someone with an attention problem, I probably wouldn't have the attention span to read through something that was that dry. So I thought, well, maybe I could put it into a novel, into a story, and make it more interesting to the reader. And so that's how Project Junebug came about. It's almost a self-help novel hybrid. And at the end of the book, I have a list of all of the strategies that this teacher used to help the student. And I'm hoping that it gets into the hands of teachers so that they can not only feel validated when they read this. I think I've gotten a lot of feedback from teachers that say, you know, you nailed it. You really showed what it was like to be on the other side of the desk, and warts and all, you know, the good parts of it and the not so good parts of it. And they felt very validated by the story. And they also liked that they were able to have something concrete they could use with their students.
Well, it certainly has hit the right chord, and with all of these awards, you have to be very, very proud of yourself.
Well, yes, I'm just glad that it got out there to the people that I wanted it to get out there to.
Yeah,
because that really was my, aside from seeing if I could write a book, I wanted to write something that would have some kind of impact, you know, some kind of a positive effect. I feel that way with all of the books that I write. I'm not writing them just to write a book. I want it to impact people that read it in a certain way, that something they can take away with them and that maybe will change their life or their outlook a little.
Well, I think you certainly accomplished it with your book that we talked about earlier, Jacqueline, and with Project Junebug. It's both of the books are so valuable, and this is one of the joys of writing, is to know that your words just can help people. It's mm-hmm. it's amazing what a book can do. It can change a life. Mm-hmm. And it certainly can change a perspective. And when we're talking about, as I was talking about history, when we need to understand what has gone on before and to understand history. Now, historical works are always very challenging because you do have to spend a lot of time doing research.
Oh, yes.
And so tell us about your upcoming book.
Okay. After I wrote Jacqueline, I thought I was finished.
No. Once you get that writing bug, you're actually never finished, and that's a wonderful thing about it. You can keep going, as Mary Higgins Clark has said to me. Well, what else would I do? She's 89 years old, and she comes out with a new best-selling book every 6 months. And I think, okay, that's pretty good.
Well, it's been my experience with writing both, actually all three of the books now. I kind of equate it to birthing a child. When you first find out that you're going to have a baby, you're excited and you just are all in and you're all enthusiastic about it. And then you kind of get into the middle and you're just slogging through and slowing down. And then you get to the end and you think, I just want this to be over. Just get this thing finished. And that's kind of what happened with all three of the books. When you get to the end and you get like, you're just about finished, but that writer's block hits you and you can't figure out how you're going to make the story arc go the way you want it to go. And So after I finished Jacqueline and I was able to give my father the book, I thought, now I'm going to go lie on the beach and enjoy myself. But unfortunately, I was watching TV one night, and there was a program on about the Revolutionary War, and it was called Legends and Lies, The Patriots. And it was really interesting. I never really, you know, it's funny because I've never been a historical fiction buff. I mean, I read Gone with the Wind, I remember, as a young teen, and that book just made such an impression on me, and I loved it. And that made the Civil War come alive more than all of the history courses I took. It really made an impression on me, but I never thought about writing historical fiction because of all the research involved. I didn't think I would like that. But during the course of watching this program, there was an incident that I had never been aware of, where this young boy who was a member of the Sons of Liberty, at the time Samuel Adams and Paul Revere, they were trying to gin up the people of Boston to break from England, and they couldn't really get ahead of steamrolling on this. The people were willing to boycott the British goods, and they were willing to do things like that. But when it came to taking up arms against the crown, they just weren't willing to take. That was a step too far. They weren't willing to go there. And so these men got together and they formed a group called the Sons of Liberty. It was kind of a shadowy organization, secret organization, and they would recruit these young boys to demonstrate outside the businesses of merchants who were breaking the boycott. You know, they were like a little rowdy street gang. And this one particular time, these boys were demonstrating in front of a business that the owner was a friend of a man named Ebenezer Richardson, who was a kind of shady guy. He was an informer, and he was a customs agent who was overbearing, and he used his position to harass people he didn't like, and he had some kind of shady personal background too in his personal life. And this man became so incensed at these boys that he went outside and screamed and yelled at them. And then he went home. They followed him to his house, and they started throwing snowballs and ice and things at the house. And this Ebenezer Richardson opened the upstairs window and fired a musket out at the crowd of boys. And there were about maybe 50 or 60 of them there. And he said that he meant it to be a warning shot, but he hit two of the boys. One, his name was Sammy Gore. He was hit in the leg. The other was an 11-year-old boy. He was the son of German immigrants. His name was Christopher Sider, and he killed him. And This little boy's death incensed the Bostonians. The fact that they spilled blood of this innocent child in their city, that got them so angry that shortly after this incident was the Boston Massacre. When actually, Crispus Attucks is known as the first casualty of the Revolutionary War, but it was actually this little boy, even though it was an unintentional casualty of the war. If it had not been for this child, it's questionable whether they would have been able to get enough Bostonians to want to take that step and break from the crown and take up arms against them. But this child's funeral was, there were like thousands of people there, and it was all written up in the Boston Globe and in the newspapers that Samuel Adams was involved in, and they wrote articles, and there was a woman that wrote this beautiful poem that she read at his funeral. I mean, it was a major event in Boston at the time, and I thought about that, and I thought, gee whiz, I'm amazed. I'd never heard of this child before, and yet it was such a pivotal moment. You know, why isn't there any information about him that's more generally known? So I went online and I looked up, I Googled his name, and there was there's all kinds of information about him in the archives and, you know, in Boston, and they have the paper with it. You can read the whole account of his funeral in the paper, and there's a lot of factual information, but nobody. I went on Amazon and I Googled his name, and it comes up in a couple of books, like as an aside, but there'd never been a book written about this child. And I thought, gee, that's odd. And I tried to then put it out of my mind and not think about it anymore, but he just, you know, he became a resident in my head. And I found myself thinking about, this would be a really good book for middle graders, because he was their age, and they don't know much about the Revolutionary War as far as I can see, and this would teach them about the issues. And I really fought hard against having to do it, but finally I said, okay, let me sit down and see if I can write this book. And the characters just started, you know, I knew my publisher is Anaya Press, and it's a small Christian press, and they, one of the things they told me with Jacqueline was that I had to be careful what characters I killed off for middle grade. So I knew I couldn't make Christopher the main character. And then I thought, well, maybe what I could do is have him be a friend of a little boy that is very different. And I started thinking about this different little boy. And Christopher was a servant of a very wealthy widow in Boston. Her name was Grizel Apthorpe. And he was the son of these poor German immigrants, and they lived in this very dilapidated part of town. And I thought, well, maybe I could have a boy who is the son of like someone wealthy, a merchant, let's say, and have the two of them somehow become friends, and you live this through the other boy. So there, that removes some of the closeness to the boy. I mean, you have to kill off Christopher.
Exactly.
And so that's when I came up with Benjamin Pembroke, and I thought, I'm going to make him he's very non-political, he's been very sheltered by his parents, he really doesn't have much of an idea about what's going on. The biggest problem in his life is he wants to be in the military. He wants to be a soldier, and his father has plans for him to go into the business. And then it turned out to be almost a coming-of-age story about how this Benjamin Pembroke and all of these incidents that kind of impinge on his life, how that changed him from the child to now the patriot.
Wow. I wish we were on television just to see Jackie's face, how excited she is to tell the story. And when you realize that all of this was sparked by one little thing on television, mm-hmm. And then the characters, and this happens, when you're a writer, and you are a writer, Jackie, because you can tell a story. When this happens, a character comes into your mind. Mm-hmm. You cannot get them out. And they become real, and then all of the people around them become real. By the time you finish the book, you know these people so mm-hmm. well. You know what they ate. You know how they walked. You know what they wore. And they are real.
Yep.
And that's what makes a great book. So this book, now you finish the book.
Yes.
And it is through the editing process.
Yep. All the final edits were done, let's see, about mid-June we finished that. Now the only thing left is I'm waiting to see the cover, and I'm kind of curious about that.
That's exciting. So your publisher actually puts you together with a illustrator?
They have an illustrator.
They have an illustrator they'll come out with a cover. Well, this is an exciting period. Then you have a little bit of a gap here where you're going to just wait for it to come out. And then, boom, it comes out, and we'll have you back on the release date, actually.
Okay.
We'll have you back on the release date.
That sounds wonderful.
And then we'll be able to hold up the book with its beautiful cover, which I'm sure they'll do. And then, of course, the process starts anew, that now you have to get out there and promote the book.
That's the hard part.
I think all writers will say that the easy part is actually the writing mm-hmm. part. The editing part, you really have to hold on. It's sort of a time where you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. But then when the book comes out, it comes the really hard part where you have to actually get out there and start selling it. Right?
Yes. And I think, especially for writers, writing is such a solitary endeavor. And a lot of writers just love to be in their own heads and sit in their studies and, you know, bang away on the computer and put stories together. They're not comfortable, you know, being salespeople. That's, I write a blog about Florida writers, and I've interviewed hundreds of them, and one of the things I always ask is, what do you find that's the most difficult thing about being a writer? And almost invariably, they say, it's the marketing. Because it just doesn't fit in with the temperament of most writers and with the personalities and with the skill set that they have.
Yes. You have to put on a lot of different hats
yes.
when you're a writer. the writing hat is the easiest hat, I think. The research hat is a fun hat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure now you've discovered that research is fun. Sometimes when writers start, they'll say, I don't know if I can do the research like you were. Mm-hmm. But once you start it, it's almost overwhelming because you can keep going deeper and
yes.
deeper. And it's just so wonderful, of course, when you think about it in this day and age where you can actually get so much on the internet.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know how people did it before they had the internet. I mean, you just can find, you know, anything. What kind of a bird was living in Israel in biblical times, and you can find it. It's just remarkable.
Yeah, we are very fortunate because it's so difficult, you know, when you're looking for details mm-hmm. in the old days. It was difficult, and that's why people spent hours and hours in libraries, which are absolutely fun, but it's difficult. And the one thing about going to a library, too, is that you do run into people who are willing to help you.
Yes.
Librarians who will go out of their way when they themselves get intrigued, because mm-hmm. for them, you know, being in the library, they're shelving things and they're putting things in order. But then every once in a while to get a writer who comes in and says, I want to know this, that sends them on their own little quest. So they're like their own little detectives for a short period of time. And I think that's always so wonderful that people should not feel hesitant about going into a library and asking a librarian to help them find these things, because they love to do it.
They do. That's been my experience too with the librarians. This it's something different
exactly.
from what they're doing, and they love reading and they love books, and this gives them almost a feeling of being a part of one, and I think they enjoy that.
Oh, absolutely, and we have so many resources here in our area, and wherever you live, you have the university libraries where they have wonderful resources where they can actually, you know. find things for you that you might not think are available. Mm-hmm. It's it's amazing what you can find. So for you, this, you know, you were not, as you said, you were not a historian, but you had to learn a lot of history.
Oh, yes. Well, I was fortunate because I came up from, I was educated old school, and when I was coming up through school, we had history taught as a different subject, as a separate subject every year. And I thought that I knew a lot about history, but when I started researching, I realized how little I actually knew, even though I had studied it right on through, senior year in high school. Every single year we had a history course that was just history and nothing else. And now that, you know, history seems to have just taken such a back seat, it's very disturbing to me. As you said, when you hear how little people know about their own history, I mean, in order to have a constitutional republic, you need a populace that understands their history. And when they started lumping it together as social studies, I used to have geography and history and civics were all separate. But now it's social studies, and it seems like history gets shoved into the background a lot, you know, in favor of other things. And I don't think it's really been a good thing for the students.
No, it hasn't. My favorite class when I was a kid was geography. Mm-hmm. Because behind the blackboard, on top of the blackboard, there was this string. And it hanged out. And every once in a while, when the door would open and the string would swish back and forth. And all of the kids knew that when the teacher pulled that string down, and there was the map of the world. And we knew. Oh, it was. And I was lucky I had, in two different grades, I had a geography teachers who just loved talking about countries. And when that map would come down and we would actually get to look at it and see the world, mm-hmm. we learned about the world, which they don't do with this mixed up social studies.
Oh, no,
because they have no concept. Well, it's funny when you ask man in the street, where is this country or where is that country? Not a clue.
Not a clue.
Not
yeah.
a clue. I have met people who have, now, because I've traveled all over the world, I've gone to lots of countries, and part of that is because of my geography teachers. Mm-hmm. Because for me, always, that map, it was so vast, and there were so many places to go, mm-hmm. and to have teachers who were excited about it. And in those days, the teachers would have these lovely long, they would have from June 5th to the day after Labor Day off. And the ones who taught, you know, so often would take that summertime and travel to these places. Yeah. And they'd come back with little things. And they'd come back with brochures and hotel things. And they would share that with the students. And I love that. I thought that was the most wonderful. My favorite classes still today, I could think about that. And I think I owe a lot of my sort of wanderlust to those teachers.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, geography, I don't think kids even know what that is.
No, they don't. I think if you ask what is geography as a separate thing, they would not know what it is. And that's a shame because the world is out there. And it's a big place, but we all are sort of interconnected, you know, and we have to know mm-hmm. what's going on in the world. And it's so funny. The things that my sister Natalie and I are like, we are obsessed with maps. We have collections of maps. And when we're reading a book, and this is one of the wonderful things, when you're reading a book like Jacqueline, get that map of France out there and look at the map and see where these places are and understand when you're dealing in Europe how very small the distances are. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Battle of the Bulge, and my father was in the Battle of the Bulge. And, you know, the guys from the Greatest Generation did not, as your father did, generally did not speak about what they went through. Mm-hmm. They didn't come back and dwell on it. They didn't tell their families about it. They went in, they did what they had to do, and that was it. But the only thing my father would talk about was the Battle of the Bulge and how his feet froze in his boots, you know, because it was so terrible. It was one of the worst winters. You know, we're talking always global warming, that was like one of the worst winters in Europe in hundreds of years. And our soldiers were there, and none of them were, we didn't have the shoes and the socks and everything. And their socks would literally freeze to their feet. So that's the only thing my father would ever talk about, is terrible, you know, how terrible walking, because they walk through Europe, by the way. Hey, I want to mention this to all of you people who don't understand it. You know, now we see, you know, soldiers in Humvees and this and this and this. Our soldiers actually walked. I mean, my father walked from Normandy all the way through Europe, you know. And so that's why it's important that we understand history and maps.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and, you know, you say that you made a very good point about how the World War II generation didn't like to talk about what happened to them. And in a way, it's unfortunate because we are losing, I read an article about how many World War II vets were losing every day, and they said that in 20 years they're all going to be gone, and their stories are going to be going with them. And I gave a keynote address the year before last at the American Legion in St. Pete Beach. And when they wanted me to talk about the book, and I was trying to think of how to frame it so that it would be meaningful to these vets. And I told them that this was my dad's story, and all of you have stories. And the only way we are going to have a really accurate record of what truly happened is by having you tell those stories, because you were the people who experienced it firsthand. There's not an agenda at work. You're telling the story to spin it a certain way. You know what went on. You need to tell your stories. And if you're not a writer, talk into a recorder. Just talk and tell your story and record it and give it to someone to keep. And you may think your grandkids won't be interested, but try sitting down and telling them your story. And I just really think it's so vital for all veterans to have a record of what they experienced, a living record of what they experienced, so that we have an accurate history that we can refer to see what the regular people, the regular soldiers and the regular sailors.
And simple things like how they decorated a tree with cotton balls, and how they made a candy cane with tongue depressors. So these little things are what, for example, what make Jackie's book interesting. They make the book come alive. And for any author out there or anybody who thinks, well, maybe I would like to start writing a book, you know, we have bay pines out here, and bay pines is filled with vets who would just love to tell their stories. So get together, maybe a few of you guys out there and gals, as authors, say, okay, let's go to Bay Pines and let's put together even short stories about that the vets will share with you. And this is a wonderful way to keep history alive.
Well, it's funny because I recently participated in a project called Homefront Cooking, and it was put together as a cookbook that has stories about that has veteran stories that are somehow connected with a recipe. And I was approached because of Jacqueline and the bread, and they asked me if I would contribute a story, and they used it as the lead selection in Homefront Cooking. And the part of the proceeds of the book are going to the Robert Irvine Foundation, which is for first responders and veterans. And it's a beautiful cookbook, and it has stories that from all these different veterans.
Okay, now we're running out of time, but I want to mention that's on your website.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
Jackie Minetti, and it's Jackie and Minetti spelled with double N.
Double N, one T.
Double N, one T. And you can see Jackie's books there. And while you're at it, please go to SueKochman.storyenvy.com. And Sue Kochman is also a local author.
She's wonderful.
She's wonderful. And one of her books is called Mason's This and That Day. And I've been, every once in a while, you have to read this book to understand that Mason is a kind of person who starts one thing and then starts another thing and then starts another thing, goes back to the other thing. And so I think all of us have these days that are this and that days. And Sue has captured that so beautifully in Mason. And then her wonderful book, Sam.
Oh, I love Sam.
I love Sam, a wonderful character. You can get Sam T-shirt on Sue's website. And again, it's suekochman.storyenvy.com. The T-shirt is adorable, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Isn't it cute?
Did you get it for your grandchildren?
Yes.
You got it for your grandchildren. It's a wonderful, and Sam is a wonderful story about going to the dentist, and so it's a perfect story for kids, and I hope that you will go there. And I want to thank you, Jackie, so much for coming in today.
It's my pleasure.
Always wonderful. So the new book is coming out
mid-October,
and it's called
One Small Spark.
One Small Spark, and we're going to have Jackie back then, and she's going to tell us about it. And it's just so exciting to see an author who really has found that joy of writing, and then the joy of seeing people who and getting to meet people who have read her book. And isn't it wonderful?
It is. That's the best part.
Isn't that the best part? And when they come up to you and they say they want a selfie with you.
Yeah, I went to a school where they read my book and they made me feel like a rock star.
Isn't it? I mean, this is one of the things for writers, that it is such a wonderful thing where you write a book and then you get a selfie and then people get so excited to meet you and to know you and to know your books. And it's just wonderful. Because as I said over and over, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're really lucky and you work at it, who knows, you might someday somebody might pick up your book and turn it into a film or a miniseries on television. And then you can hear cameras, light, action. And that's a really great one. So, but it all comes down to what? Having to sit down and do it, correct?
Yep, that's true.
If you don't actually do it, as I said, if you write a page a day, you have 365 pages, but you don't need that many because a middle grade book is how many pages?
About 185.
185. So, okay, you can do it. And just remember, you have wonderful stories in your family that you can start with. And that's always great. So, Jackie, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You have really accomplished a great deal in a short time. Really, from when you started writing, and you've just done a beautiful job. And I'm very, very proud to know you.
Oh,
and,
thank you, Betsy.
And meanwhile, everybody say something nice to somebody today. And I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Are you going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room? Yes, we'll all say something nice to Big Ed in the control room because he is always so good to me, and I really, really appreciate everything he does for me. Thanks, Ed. Fantastic guy, isn't he?
He is.
He is. Wonderful. Okay. So, everybody, it's been a crazy week, hasn't it? With a holiday on Wednesdays, it just throws you off completely. You don't know what you're doing. I woke up this morning. I thought it was Monday morning because I thought it was.
I had the same experience.
Oh my goodness! It's Sunday. Okay, bye bye now. Have a great real weekend now. Okay, bye everybody.